When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to CAMH.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. Nora Loretto.
Hey.
You didn't shout back my name enthusiastically. I'll forgive it. Writer, author, researcher, and half of the Sandy and Nora podcast. Welcome back to Shortcuts, where we talk shit about the news.
Thank you, Jesse Brown.
Today on the show, teddy bears, cowboy hats, and TikTok memes. We will rate and review the pregame social media warm-up of the federal leaders. Also, can we in the media keep everyone addicted to COVID doom scrolling? Seriously, can we? Pretty please? Finally, Nora, we will talk about Wendy Mesley's new independent podcast. Just kidding.
What? No.
God. Or am I? This episode of Shortcuts is brought to you by John Broche, Morgan Peters, Kat Bailey, Jonathan Sherrard, Fraser Young, Emma Bell Scolan, Vincennes Cote, and Laura.
My name is Laura, and I'm a violinist and improvisation teacher in Ottawa, Ontario. I support Canada Land because Archie Mann and the Commons team show me a side of Canada that I never knew existed. Their work proves that fact is way stranger than fiction.
So, Nora, here's something that nobody wants. An election. You into it?
Yeah. Let's go.
Nobody wants this election. It will be hard to get anyone to pay attention to it. And those are exactly the right kind of conditions that favor Justin Trudeau, or so Justin Trudeau is gambling. What all of this means is that the other party leaders have to get their shit together. Aaron O'Toole and Jagmeet Singh have to shine up their shoes and start tap dancing. And they're kind of trying different stuff out over the summer, you know, experiment with their personal brands and reboot the image. And what I want to do today with you, Nora, is go through a few of these clips and picks and pass judgment on them. What do you say?
I love it. I'm here to judge.
All right. Let's begin with our brave leader. You know, it seemed to me that the Trudeau administration was kind of just like accumulating scandals and problems as one might accumulate scraggly graying hairs on one's face. And it was just looking chaotic and unkempt, just unwholesome. And then something happened. I don't know what. And everything seemed fresh and new, like it was 2015 all over again. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I know that you read every single tweet that I put out into the world. And so I know that you saw back in February that I tweeted that the most annoying stunt will be when Trudeau shaves off his playoff beard or his COVID beard and announces it's 2021 and COVID is done. And he did that. I believe that's what you're talking about. He shaved it all off. He probably got a face peel. And I'm not sure if you noticed, but it happened the day before his second vaccination. Like, what better way to announce to Canadians that this is done and we are ready for a two-dose summer? And this was on July 2nd.
Like, I just wish it wasn't so tacky. Like, so we're going to talk about specific things they've put out on their feeds. And what we got from Justin Trudeau was, ooh, look, it's his face again. And here he is solemnly laying a little teddy bear on unmarked graves that they've discovered. He's kneeling and placing a teddy bear, and he's got an orange shirt pin on his suit. Mm-hmm. And he tweets, after hearing from residential school survivors and seeing the unmarked graves in Kawasess First Nation, it's hard to find the words that are enough. But to all those affected, know that I am here as your partner to walk the path of reconciliation and right these historical wrongs.
Well, that was just around the same time that the federal government announced a new agreement with Kawasess First Nation to give control over the child welfare service to the First Nation. And I think that the fact that we've had now announcement after announcement after announcement of unmarked graves or of mass graves, now totaling well into the thousands, almost 2,000, Trudeau like has to walk a very bizarre line of what effectively is genocide denial, because the government isn't actually doing what they need to do to atone for what happened, to make right what happened, to start undoing some of the harmful policies that are perpetuating colonial violence. At the same time, you know, telegraph to Canadians that he is doing everything possible. And this is so cynical, and it's okay to approach this topic today with levity and kind of making fun of these folks. But this picture in particular and that tweet in particular really does show just how cynical and gross the federal government and Justin Trudeau specifically is on this issue. Because, of course, they're still fighting residential school survivors in court. They're still not funding services on reserve at the same level that they'd be funded off reserve, right? There's still communities without drinking water. We know the list. And we also know that these are not going to be issues that decide the election, because genocide and colonialism in this country runs so deep. And so this is like performative to the max. And it really makes my stomach churn just knowing that the power is in Trudeau's hands to make some significant changes here. And he's not going to do it. He's not going to be forced into doing it. And he won't get any political capital if he doesn't.
It's really just like a denial of the last 6 years. I mean, I think that he could sort of credibly present himself in 2015 as like, look, my father's sins are not my own. My party's sins are not my own. I'm running on a platform of reconciliation. That was before his broken promises. That was before Jody Wilson-Raybould. So I think you're right. It's a kind of denialism. It's hoping against hope that if he combines enough symbols, you know, the teddy bear is a symbol, the orange shirt is a symbol, mm-hmm. his own damn face, which he thinks we're so enamored with. And damn it, he's right. He can shave and that's news, you know?
Right.
And frankly, you know, the new governor general is a symbolic appointment. Like, the sheer force of the media management of this will overcome the reality and the failures on this file, and he can still assert himself mm-hmm. as the Prime Minister of Reconciliation. I see it as tacky and ham-fisted, but I also have to concede, like, I wonder if this might work. I mean, you know, Karen Pugliese mm-hmm. was on the show. Like, I was like, look, this is going to be a headline every time they make another discovery, and we're going to have to deal with this. And she said, I don't think so. I think that the first one is the headline, and then by the fourth or fifth discovery, it's buried in the paper and we kind of forget about it. And that's already happened.
Yeah, I think the question is, who's the audience for this spectacle? And the audience are people who vote Liberal, right? It's by and large, it's white Canadians, but not just white Canadians, but it's certainly Canadians who both feel sad about this news, but who are okay to accept platitudes as being some sort of promise. You're right in talking about how 2015 was this moment where he was new and it was none of the old vestiges of the Liberal Party. But the Liberal Party is the Liberal Party. And Trudeau, I mean, like, he has a name that is so associated with the Liberal Party, that it's also very clear that the party establishment has come up with a bit of an exit strategy. So if Trudeau did something tomorrow that was so egregious that he needed to be just put away in a drawer, they've got this Mark Carney, Chrystia Freeland kind of show just waiting on the side to swoop in and to do the new, oh, this is the new Liberal Party. Once again, the same strategy of 2015. And I think that's very interesting that they've got these two strategies moving forward that are kind of foolproof, because at the end of the day, it also just is like a relative question. Where is Trudeau relative to Aaron O'Toole and to Jagmeet Singh? And if he can just maintain people having a good mood, which I've seen the polls have said that Canadians' mood is kind of getting better as the vaccines are continuing, then he's going to win. There's really no question that this is going to be a relatively easy election for him. And Karen's right. I mean, the first time the news broke in Kamloops, I received a message from a longtime reporter who was saying to me, I don't understand why this is news. I wrote this piece a decade ago, and it was literally like, you know, mass graves found at a residential school site. And it's like, exactly. We live in a goldfish country, and Liberals are masters at forcing us to forget, showing us something shiny, and hoping that it's just shiny enough that we'll choose that rather than the other options.
I mean, now the shiny new thing is nostalgia. He's back in the American media. His whatever celebrity status he has, he can still get an op-ed into CNN. And he writes this just embarrassing series of platitudes about his feminist credentials. And we can smash one of the defining inequalities of our time. So it's, I think we can get a sense of what he's going to be selling, which is like, it's 2015 all over again. I am your feminist PM. I am your reconciliation PM. Let's move on. Let's have a look at conservative leader. What's his name again? Nobody knows this guy. Aaron O'Toole.
This is Alberta, a magnificent province that is rich in resources from agriculture to energy to innovation, but even richer in its people. People that have come here to work hard, to have success, to help others. This is a place where you get things done. It's a get-her-done province. And since 1967, Albertans have contributed $600 billion to the Canadian Federation. That's money for hospitals. That's money for schools. There's been more jobs at times in Ontario because of the energy sector in Alberta than there has been in Ottawa, for example. Jobs, opportunity, because of this Alberta success.
All right, that's some boilerplate pandering in audio form. Really, the message is visual. And what we see here is Aaron O'Toole with like a 10-gallon cowboy hat in a field, and he says, this is Alberta, which I want to fact check, by the way. That field could be anywhere. I know he was in Alberta, so he might as well have gone and filmed it there. But the cowboy hat, it was bugging me, this image of him. Who is he reminding me of? Do you remember the movie Anchorman?
I never saw it.
That does not shock me. Champ Kind. Champ. Whammy. That guy. It's the spinning image. It almost, like, he has to have been going for that.
I kind of expected to see, like, him do that dance where he's kicking his heel spurs out. Like, Aaron O'Toole has a mountain to climb to make him look good. I don't know how to say that in any other kind of way. I mean, someone once said to me that his chin looks like Hank Hill's butt, like in one of those memes where it was like clenched shut. People might understand that reference if you're like me and didn't watch Anchorman. But he's really trying to obviously appeal to the base of the Conservative Party. And as an Ontarian, as someone that's from the suburbs in Ontario, he doesn't actually have any connections to rural Canada, which is really, really important. There's nothing the Conservatives can do to make themselves look better than the Liberals right now. And I say that knowing that the Liberals have such a lock on how Canada has responded to the pandemic. And while we have mass deaths and while we have tons of mismanagement and all of these problems, at the same time, people are being vaccinated. And that's political capital that you just cannot erode. And at the same time, you have this guy who's deeply inauthentic, awkward. I mean, I find some elements of Aaron O'Toole not totally off-putting. And I think that he is the kind of leader that might be able to move the party away from the really hard Christian right-wing kind of stuff, the stink that surrounded Scheer. But we know that that's a really important part of the party for them to win. And so he's got to walk a really weird line between appealing to those folks, but then also appealing to average people that might consider voting Liberal. But it's not going to pass by the belt buckle, cowboy shirt, cowboy hat kind of look in a field.
Yeehaw, fellow cowpokes. Look, I got nothing against this guy. He seems fine. Like he's not as cringy as Scheer. But this guy is like nobody from nowhere. Like, I don't know if one person in a thousand would be able to put a name to a photograph of this guy. He's got to put on a cowboy hat, like some Groucho Marx glasses. He needs some shtick because, like, just from like basic brand recognition or name recognition, there's a reason why Trudeau is calling this now. And it's because this guy just has failed to define himself in any which way. We can say whatever we want about Trudeau. Most voters in Canada just do not feel like they have a choice.
Yeah, the thing about the Conservative Party of Canada is that the leader has to be believable at the international plowing match, right? Has to be someone who, on top of a tractor, is someone you can believe has actually driven a tractor before. What I do think is that Erin O'Toole is a placeholder leader, and whoever comes next, if they get someone who spoke to rural Canada, who was actually charismatic, with someone who was spunky, and I'm thinking specifically someone who's not a white man, I think that that would actually really, really change the success possibilities of the Conservative Party of Canada. I'm wondering what forces need to kind of coalesce to make that happen, but that would be my prediction in the long term of where this party is going. But they're definitely not winning this next election.
Let's talk about Jagmeet. You know, there's all of this hype around Jagmeet as a TikTok superstar. And The Star wrote a really interesting piece about, you know, besides just saying, look, he's got TikTok videos that people like, the actual analysis of his TikTok account. Jagmeet Singh boasts more than 625,000 followers on TikTok, where users post short clips featuring popular songs, dance trends and such. And he got that in less than 2 years. That is the same number-ish that it took him 8 years to get on Instagram. Mm. And he doesn't have that level of support on Twitter, even though he's been on Twitter for a decade. And of course, TikTok has this young audience. It's really hard to tell what's going on from the sound, but we'll play a few here and I'll do my best to explain.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, thank you. I think that the formula that Jagmeet has employed to great success on TikTok is piggybacking an existing TikTok meme. There's one really popular video where it's like, you're laughing to a Chief Keef song, and then like there's like the captions tell you what it is that you're laughing at. And these are usually used like by TikTok influencers and performers to make jokes, but he actually does make them about policy. He seems natural. He's not cringy. It can get a little bit low on the policy. Like there's this one, his most recent one is this meme where the TikTok dancer is superimposed in front of a group of people dancing. And the joke you do is like everyone snaps into formation and dances in synchronicity halfway through the video. And the way that this has become a TikTok meme is different people saying, this is when you used to get made fun of for being Korean, but now people are spending $150,000 on plastic surgery to look just like you. And then here you are dancing in victory, in vindication. Or when you get made fun of for your za'atar sandwiches in middle school, but now people are paying $10 for it at Trader Joe's. So these are like, the meme is, they all laughed at me, but now it's gone my way. And Jagmeet's version of this is, when they say young people don't vote, but here's the vindication, but you know they're going to make history in the next election. And he rolls up his sleeves and he dances along in the TikTok video. Okay, that's Jesse explaining TikTok. It's a compelling narrative that he's going to mobilize all of these Canadian young voters who haven't been voters in the past. But as Murad pointed out on the backbench, Murad wrote that article about Jagmeet in the last election about Jagmeet's Snapchat following. And guess what? Those fucking millennials didn't show up and vote.
Okay, so I have to admit that I actually do think these videos are cringe. And maybe it's just because Jagmeet's like older than me by maybe 3 years. And I'm like, oh, dude, what are you doing? This is for young people. I do have to admit that when I watch this, I have to like set my eyes on you will be cringing soon. And then I'm like, whoa, there it is. There I am. One of the problems with the meme format on TikTok is the words often cover up other words on the screen. And so even though there is political, some level of political discussion, sometimes you can't even read it. And so I find that I'm not convinced that this is at all going to do what Singh's campaign team is saying it is doing. like, okay, so I have this podcast. It's called Sandy and Nora, and a lot of our audience is exactly the target audience that the NDP is trying to get, right? Young people. And they're young enough that I feel very fucking old when some of them talk to me about politics. And it's very clear that we're coming from very different political perspectives. And the things that I hear from the engaged left-wing young people who the NDP is trying to attract is that they want substantive policy discussion. They want to hear not just the criticism, which is so easy, and I say this as a critic, but they want to hear what the NDP is actually going to do. And the problem with the TikToks is that the NDP does not, and Singh does not, ever say what the NDP would do. It's all criticism. And so it's an okay meme to be like, this is what happens when young people actually come out and vote, even though we know statistically speaking that's not going to happen. Also because young people have been so disenfranchised for so many other reasons that, I mean, expressing politics through voting is not actually a great proxy, but I mean, you're a political party, so you obviously care about that. But the meme format and the format on TikTok allows Singh to not ever talk about what he actually would do.
Yeah.
And when the NDP does say what they're going to do, it comes off as liberal light or insufficient or not exactly what people want to hear or see. And so I just see this as a PR campaign to distract from the fact that the NDP is kind of nowheresville on really like hard policy discussions. And I think that young people have a hunger for that. And I don't think that this is going to work.
To your point about substantive policy stuff, there are two Jagmeet Singhs on social media, depending on which platform. And I have to say, there was a pretty damn solid traditional political ad that the NDP put out.
Who's been fighting for you this pandemic? Not this guy. Trudeau wants you to think it was him, but really it was Jagmeet Singh. Jagmeet used the minority government to force Trudeau to get more people, more help, faster. Trudeau wanted to skimp on CERB. Jagmeet made him double it. Trudeau wanted to end benefits. Jagmeet made him extend them. And Trudeau offered almost nothing for small business. Jagmeet delivered a 75% wage subsidy. Justin Trudeau talks. Jagmeet Singh delivers.
Okay, so what you get there, I think, was effective because, like, I haven't been keeping track of what the influence of the NDP in the minority government on Trudeau's minority government has been during the pandemic and where they have nudged the Liberals to provide more CERB or more weeks of benefits. And, you know, these are political claims, so all of them bear fact-checking. But I think that this is exactly what they need to be doing, because we know that to the 5 million people who liked him on TikTok, but not to you, Nora, Jagmeet is liked on TikTok. He's funny. He's a good critic of Trudeau. But I think the big question is like, yeah, but okay, when you're not criticizing, when you're actually doing something, like, what can you do?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very effective thing for him to say, I'm not speaking in big platitudes. $2,000 is better than $1,000. And that's what my influence has been. And frankly, because everyone knows he's not actually running to be prime minister, he's running to be the official opposition. What this presents is like, there are tangible benefits in your pocket for having me in a powerful position in the outcome of this election.
Mm-hmm.
To our overview of like what this tells us about what's coming up, I think that this could be an effective route for the NDP. Like, whatever young votes they could pick up, plus, you know, it's also olds like me in the Toronto Star talking about his TikTok fame as much as it is his TikTok fame, but then actually swaying people who maybe are like, I hope people are cringing at Trudeau. Like, just, I'm not even talking from a politics point of view. It's just that, like, Trudeau treats everybody like we're dumb. I mean, I guess all these guys do. So I kind of hope that people are, like, in the market for other options, at least. And if they are in the market for other options, I kind of think that this is not a terrible social media strategy for Jagmeet Singh and the NDP.
Yeah, it's actually the only option, I think, because the video, the things that they say in the video, I mean, I would argue some details about that, but I'm a critic. From the average person's perspective, it is true that the NDP has been fighting to get more of some of these things. And so this is the best option for them to try and convince people that a minority government is good and that it can be functional. The problem with the NDP is they dance so much on the edges that these small reforms, they're not enough. And there's such an appetite out there for like a bold, confident political option that is different from what we've ever had, especially after the pandemic. And I've just been so constantly disappointed that the NDP hasn't done that. They haven't offered that. And so if we're having the conversation about the PR strategy, like the TikTok stuff is great for the reasons that you mentioned. It's great because it has a lot of followers. People know who he is. Like, to create the celebrity, that's all great from a PR perspective. And it's all great from a PR perspective to hang their hat on expanding these social programs and being that watchdog that they tried to position themselves as during the pandemic. I don't think that the PR piece, though, is enough to kind of get past the missing pieces in the bold vision, which, you know, we'll see. We'll see what they come up with for their platform. And I also think that it's going to be very interesting to see how young people engage with politics right now, because millennials and Gen Z, you know, have been just battered by this pandemic. And it's really anyone's guess and anyone's taking how they're going to orient themselves towards that demographic. It looks like Erin O'Toole's like, fuck it. Like, I'm not even going to get anywhere with these folks. So it'll be very interesting to see between the Liberals, the NDP, and if the fucking Greens can even like stand up at the end of all of this.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter-like seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get, like, anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding, like, the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. Nora, we duly note stuff that that people might otherwise just never know about. What do you have to duly note today?
Today, I want to duly note a decision that the federal government made in the last couple of days that has gotten almost no attention. So, Jesse, tell me if you've heard about this. The federal government has made a change to NSERC and to CFI. That's the National Sciences and Engineering Research Council of Canada and the Canadian Foundation for Innovation. They fund scientific research in this country. And this past week, the federal government has instituted a new security intelligence risk assessment for all research funds that are doled out by NSERC and CFI. Now, these two agencies pay for basic research in Canada. They pay for graduate students. CFI pays for equipment and laboratory modifications if you need to change your lab around or whatever. And the idea that the security establishment is now going to be part of deciding who gets research funding in this country, I think, is frankly frightening. The way that this has been pitched to Canadians is, well, China is stealing our research secrets, and therefore we need to survey Canadian researchers more. But it's an issue that has major implications on academic freedom. It has big implications on just our research program in general in this country and how we fund projects and how we fund collaborations, including international collaborations. And then, of course, it also has a huge impact on Chinese researchers, whether or not they're international students or they're Chinese nationals doing research in Canada, or if they're just Chinese Canadians who are doing research on anything. It's very broad, and I wish that there was more outrage on this issue than the zero that I've seen.
Well, I have to imagine that this has something to do with those two doctors in Winnipeg at the level 4 virus lab. I guess I feel anxious and scared and uneasy more than outraged. Mm. But I will say, duly noted. I have one.
Okay.
This is not something that escaped people's attention. In fact, this trended in Canada with 1.4 million views. It was a chart by an account called Artificient, which is a, as I understand it, they basically do telecom data analysis. They don't have a lot of followers. Why did this go so viral in Canada? Because it is a chart of mobile data usage. And the chart was not meant to drag Canada. The chart was really like, hey, look, a gigabyte of mobile data has never been cheaper. Look at all these countries and how little they're paying for a gigabyte of data. And let's compare data usage, mobile data usage, against cost, right? And what they've shown is that most countries are all bundled up on one side of this graph. They're paying less for mobile data than ever before, and they're using a shit ton of it. And then way off in the far distance, way off, far away from all those other countries' little icons, at the most expensive and the lowest usage was Canada. What I want to duly note is not the fact of this, because everybody knows that we are screwed on the daily. What I want to duly note is I don't want to hear you, Canadians, grouse about this, because I've covered this stuff for 5 years. I've been through this before, and you don't do shit. I won't play this game that we're all actually mad enough to change anything about the telecom grip on our federal government, which is now dictating everything about content policy and telecom policy. And we have a prime minister who ran on a platform of cutting our bills. They all fucking do. They don't do shit. And we're not going to do shit. And we're pathetic little weaklings.
You know, I was once at an event at Ryerson University honoring Ted Rogers for I don't remember what. And in the middle of the event, someone's cell phone went off. And the president at the time, Sheldon Levy, stopped his speech and just off the cuff sent, oh, Ted's made another 7 cents. And he got in a lot of trouble for making fun of how much the Rogers family makes. And it was a very exclusive event. So I was very happy to have been able to witness that little scuffle among the elites. This is theft. It's abhorrent. It's so typically Canadian. And I hate it just as much as you do. I'll duly note your unduly fuck you.
All right. So, Nora, I want to talk about something else that nobody wants to talk about or think about after a year and a half of the media, I think more or less really like trying to rise to the occasion and give people the information they needed. Everybody, every day, what's going on with this pandemic? What does it mean? What is the science today? What's the science? What's the next science? When's the vaccine coming? Like, let me learn about vaccines. And we kind of quickly established the COVID news cycle, which became people's like doom scrolling habit. And we all, I don't want to be cynical about this. News audiences went way up during the pandemic. But I think that this was journalists, for the most part, not cynically juicing that, but really trying to, like, people needed information and they needed to learn things and we tried to help them. And you did this every day. Like, it was just like a daily operation of 1,000 different areas of concern and one that was going neglected that you fulfilled a very crucial role looking at long-term care. But there were a lot of beats like that. Mm-hmm. And then there were beats of like getting the doctors on the air. Like suddenly these doctors were media personalities. Like we all know the territory that I'm describing very well. And it very quickly became what the media was comprised of. And now most of us are vaccinated. And we're in this weird moment where I feel like the media doesn't know what to do, right? Like, okay, we do like the traffic and we also are just creatures of habit that once we get into a rhythm. So like, you know, I'm hearing it goes up and then it goes down. Oh, Israel was looking good, but now the Delta variant. So I heard like a scary story this morning, like, oh, actually Israel's fucked. I kind of am getting to this point where I'm like, I don't think herd immunity is going to happen. I think that COVID is going to be with us like forever. It's going to be like a booster shot. We don't have a news alert when there's a new booster shot. And maybe we're going to have to like wean ourselves off of the traffic that we came to enjoy during the pandemic. And maybe what was once actually a useful service is now like we're actually fucking with people's well-being and like we need to fucking chill with the constant COVID coverage and the way that we're covering it. And I want to peg this to one thing I read in the Star. Aaron Drefell spoke to me earlier, a health reporter for the Montreal Gazette, about how too much can be destructive. And we got too granular on AstraZeneca. Oh, it does this and the blood clots on 1 in 1,000,000, 1 in 100,000. We basically put so much stink on this vaccine that people were afraid to get it. And now I read in the Star that thousands of AstraZeneca doses have expired and been thrown out in Canada, which makes me just like violently angry. Like I went from pharmacy to clinic being turned away because I knew they were expiring. So I was like, I don't care. I'll lie to get this. And they turned me away. But the media had something to do with that. What do you think? Like, what's your plan with the daily information, the journalism that you've been doing?
Yeah.
When do you stop?
Yeah, I stop when the deaths stop in residential care, and we are getting really close to that. So I've been thinking about this a lot. And because I've been so immersed in that world online, I have for a long time been very concerned by the doom reporting that so many journalists and doctors, I mean, I don't want to say that they're doing reporting, but they've been contributing to it. In fact, you know, there'd also often be times where I'd have, you know, private chats with other journalists saying, wait, like, does this feel like really, really doomy, or am I just like getting really cynical? It's like, no, people are being kind of over the top. But we always had to make sure people were just clinging to, as you say, to the press, to those daily reports to find out the next big thing. And this has been very, very damaging. In fact, I'm writing a book about how the pandemic was spun by media and politicians and looking at all of the different ways in which coverage was really torqued and unnecessarily and at the expense of doing things like, you know, why wasn't there any national media organizations that would give us a weekly snapshot of what the hotspots were? And not just that, but what the hotspots were and then what their cases were per capita. So you can actually compare and say, oh my God, the outbreak in northeastern Ontario is actually worse than almost all of the outbreaks that we've seen in Canada, including Peel, like which we've just heard a lot about. You know, so there was really no national coverage that gave that perspective. And in the same way, that would have also allowed people to see, oh, it's actually safer where I am. It's just been chasing that scariness that you talk about. And so, yeah, I don't know how the news agencies shift out of that. For me, I've tried to highlight really good and positive news, like the medical advancements around mRNA vaccines, which I think are wonderful. And, you know, that there's really great stories coming out of people like lining up to get vaccinated and doing everything they can to try and, you know, make themselves safe. But there's a hangover here that is going to take a long time to go away. And I liken it a little bit to the American media coverage of Trump. And once Trump was out of the mix, like, then how did they pivot to Biden? You just can't do it in the same way.
You could go the other way in the press, as Toronto Star's Martin Reg Cohn did with a column. Canada's vaccination rate is now world class. For all the doubting and doomsaying, our progress has been nothing short of miraculous. That's a nice little bit of nice news. They're also, you know, in the early campaign season for Trudeau. What do you think of that hot take?
That's a shit take. It was like, yes, Jesus himself walked on water to give us these fucking vaccinations. That's what that means. Miraculous, right? That word actually means something. And in it, he also disparaged this idea that Canada is vaccine hoarding, which is objectively true. We are hoarding vaccines. This has been an issue for 8 months now, 9 months now. We're even trying to give away AstraZeneca doses that, you know, as you say, people like are not able to access. And so, you know, someone like Red Cohen, who's, I don't know, I mean, he's just so close to the liberals and his stuff is just so predictable. That's the other side that we also do not need. We don't need the rah-rah cheerleading, especially in the view of an election. We need to have really sober analyses about what Canada failed at. Because, I mean, talking about the good parts of it does what exactly? Like, I want to hear, like, what happened to the whole military establishment in this whole situation? We had military leaders that were supposed to coordinate it all. What did they actually do? And how much was this public health? And what is actually going on with healthcare workers that aren't getting vaccinated? What's driving that? Is there something that the majority of them are being driven by that we can actually have a conversation about? Or are we just going to say, no, it has to be mandatory. We need to make it illegal for them to not be vaccinated. If you're the kind of journalist or columnist that's boring and can't think outside of the box, the pandemic has been really difficult because you then write the same story over and over and over again. And I'm seeing that a little bit as now we're getting out of the difficult days of the pandemic in Canada, that you're going to see these really boring and obvious takes like, ho-ho, actually everything was great. We're the envy of the world. And it's like, that's not helpful either.
We're giving away surplus that we paid for while we're throwing away surplus that we let spoil. This is no triumph.
Mm-mm.
But, you know, the mood has changed. The vaccine is a miracle. We're all enjoying the relief of being vaccinated, not the relief of the wonderful management and leadership I mean, Trudeau is just absent.
But, and this goes back to that whole goldfish nation thing that I mentioned earlier, right? Like, there's no interest in introspection. There's no interest in looking back and saying, okay, what actually did go wrong? What problems did we have within the Federation that we need to address? And this is why I wrote this book, because I knew that there would be a concerted effort to erase everything that we just went through. I was part of a report that came out at the end of June that estimated that Canada's actual COVID death rate could be double what has been officially announced. And it's been buried. Like, there's been no media coverage beyond the report. There's been no attempt to, like, look into the methodology, to question. In the rare cases that a public health official was questioned on this, Bonnie Henry in British Columbia said that she'd take the report with a grain of salt. And we ask all these questions, like, why is it this? Why is it this? Why is this? Why have all of these pieces of evidence showing that our death rate is actually far higher than has been officially counted? And There's no interest in, like, digging through that and actually saying, oh, wow, maybe there is a problem with Canada's death reporting system. Maybe the cremation data is telling us something interesting about what has happened in this pandemic. But there's just this desire to just erase and erase and erase. And then we'll have the same debates and the same columnists will say the same thing over and over, all as we march towards this this fall election. And it's really damaging because obviously there were a lot of issues that were laid bare during the pandemic and still are that we need to fix within society. But on a personal level, there's a lot of trauma because there's a lot of people that have lost a lot of people they loved from this pandemic. And a lot of those people did not need to die. And we have not ever reckoned with the fact that people died who didn't need to die. And I don't know what it's going to take to get journalists and politicians in different ways to actually contend and grapple with that fact.
Well, I think you've laid out what COVID coverage might look like. It would be better than the kind of headlines that we're running from, like, Reuters with this misleading presentation of the World Health Organization warning against mixing and matching COVID vaccines, or just, like, meandering headlines about, you know, do we need a booster shot? And, like, like, we got to get out of the cycle. Your cycle is no more, it's still doom scrolly and negative and not anything that anybody wants to be reading over the summer, where I think people have deserved a little bit of a respite. But if we're going to be publishing negative, depressing things, let's at least have them be worthwhile.
Yeah, right.
Okay, that is Shortcuts for this week. Nora, thank you.
You're welcome.
We're on Twitter at CanadaLand. You can email me. I'm at jesse@canadaland.com, and I read everything that you send. Nora, where can people find you?
You can find me around. I mean, I'm at Twitter at NoLore, N-O-L-O-R-E, or you can check out SandyNora.com, the podcast, and I also read everything you send.
This episode is produced by Tiffany Lamb, with additional production by Tristan Capicchione. Theme music is by So Called. Syndication is by CFUV, 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at CFUV.ca. If you like what we do, if you want to receive ad-free versions of all of our podcasts and be a part of keeping this thing going, support us. Hit the link in the show notes or go to canadaland.com/join.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.